Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to the School of Influence podcast, where the queen and king of influencer marketing, authors and professors Amanda Russell and Neil Schaefer, cut through the noise and dissect what makes brands and professionals influential. No fluff, just the real deal.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the School of Influence podcast. And man, today's guest, when some people talk about a brand, you know that they've made it big. You know that they have influence. But how did they get to be the influential entity that they became? And today, I think we're going to have a great case study, Amanda. I'll let you do the introduction. And, I just want to say that when I go to Japan, I hear about Barry's Bootcamp, and you guys aren't even in Japan. So I think that says more than anything. So Amanda, I'll let you make the formal introduction to our guest.
I will. So I'm really excited today to have one of my favorite people from when I started back when I was doing my fitness stuff, Joey Gonzalez, who is the CEO of Barry's Bootcamp, which I think it like signifies cult following when you hear that term. And especially in fitness, it's like the status symbol for people when they feel like when you're like, you're really in shape. Oh, you do Barry's Bootcamp. What they've done, what this company has managed to do with Joey at the helm is it legitimately is a case study. And so I'm really excited to have you and talk a little bit about what you've managed to do with a company across the globe that so many brands would love to learn from, to figure out how can we do that? Welcome, first of all. Thank you so much for being here. I would actually like to know, because I don't know, how you actually started with Barry's.
Oh, well, first of all, it's so great to be with you again, Amanda, after so many years, and thank you for having me. So I started my first experience. I have sort of a 4D experience with Barry's. First was as a client. I fell in love with the brand. I fell in love with the experience. I fell in love with the community the same way so many other people have, you know, since. And that was back in 2002. My second touch point was as an instructor, because Barry noticed, you know, I was in class 2, sometimes 3 times a day, and finally said, "Do you want to teach?" And I was like, I do actually want to teach really badly. So that was number 2. Number 3 is when I started to manage the business. So I loved it so much that I just was trying to figure out a way to learn more about, you know, operations and how it works. And so I was hired for the GM position for the studio in West Hollywood. And then number 4 was as an investor and, you know, as the CEO and somebody who runs the business day to day. But that was like the most exciting, obviously, turning point for me. And I tortured the founders every day for 4 or 5 years until they finally allowed me to invest and become a partner and move around the country and open up. I just knew, like I said, this is so portable and scalable and everybody who visits me loves it. And for a while, you know, there was no boutique fitness. So I think Barry and the other founders were just nervous about whether or not it would succeed outside of Hollywood's own backyard. So
it is a really interesting, it's funny you say, because like, I feel like you saw that, because it could have been a really good cult following just in LA. And I think that given the nature of the kind of workout and the brand, that a lot of people probably thought that it wouldn't work that model probably wouldn't work elsewhere, but you kind of had this vision to that, yes, it will. Let's just keep bringing it everywhere. And you managed to legitimately replicate in even markets that like blow my mind. Like Neil, obviously it wasn't this past summer because that was COVID, but the summer before when you guys launched in Paris. And I remember thinking, oh my God, how can you guys, this is probably the toughest market, not because it's such a different kind of culture around fitness in general, but the intensity of berries, and then you put it in Paris, the Parisian culture, but yet the excitement around it at that time too in the city, it was like, it became like this, again, like a status of like, how do you build this community, this legitimately like tribal cult-like community of even you have like celebrities like Kim Kardashian, like wear literally advertising for you, wearing the Barry shirt that she does. What do you think were the factors that contributed to that kind of community and excitement around the brand?
So I would say two things. At its core, Barry's has always been the best workout in the world. And that's something that the founders nor I trademarked at the beginning. It was something that was handed to us by all of our clients. And so when we do sizzle reels or anything and we'd interview people, every single time the first words out of their mouth is Barry's is the best workout in the world. And so that sort of just became our tagline. And then we did eventually trademark it. And that was really, you know, it was the best kept secret. It was, if you were a celebrity and you had to get fit in 3 or 4 weeks, you went to Barry's and you literally did it 5 times a week and you were ready to, you know, do a shoot in your underwear and all was good. But I think what's actually made it so special is the community piece, is the fact that, you know, I grew up in the most homogenous place on earth in the Midwest. And, you know, I'm a Latinx gay boy who like had a really difficult time fitting in. And the minute I walked into Barry's, it just felt like home. And that's true of so many people, like people who are originally intimidated by the brand, because by the way, we've dropped the word bootcamp. So we're actually just Barry's now.
Oh, okay.
Because it scares so many people. And also we've rolled out new modalities, not just the bootcamp format anymore. So people who come to Barry's are always surprised by how friendly everyone is, right? And how easy it is to just fit in there. And so that, I think, the workout, of course, like that is why people used to go. And it is why I think the word spread like fire. But the community, the feeling of belonging, the genuine investment in, you know, human equity in our clients, in our employees, like that's actually what I think has kept people coming back.
Yeah, you made a comment in an interview at one point or in an article that I read, which I loved. And I just have to say it. You were talking about like how Barry's makes you feel like, you know, you're part of a bigger community. And I think this is what you said back in 1998, every instructor knew your name, your dog, your daughter, everybody. It was like, cheers. We really tried to preserve that to you. And when you, I think that just like, is that kind of part of the, like, we want to make it like the cheers of, because.
For sure. Yeah. Even from an infrastructure level, we've invested in community marketing. We've invested in client experience. We are so invested in trying to scale that feeling, right? Which is really hard to do at this level when you have 71 locations in 14 countries around the world, but trying to make people feel special, trying to make them feel recognized, encouraging our partners to know people's names, handing them lists of the clients who are in their classes, making sure we have meaningful touch points with first timers. We just have we pay so much attention to the relationships, and our biggest moments of defeat at Barry's are when we get those emails where we've disappointed people, and we have our client experience team that is just like ready to go. Like they are ready to make calls, ready to write emails to anybody that we've disappointed, because all we want to do is make someone's day a little bit better than when they came.
When you have a business in like when it's just you, when you start, it's easy to create that kind of culture. But it's when you start to scale and replicate and you have less personal, when leadership has less personal touch with the studios and the employees and the community, what are some of the things to build? Because you're right, you said the word infrastructure. And I think that's a really good term for it. But how, what are some tips to like, what do you do to build that infrastructure to keep it consistent where it doesn't feel like this is a forced mandate?
So you have to first recognize what are the things that you've been doing as like a mom and pops, you know, one or two unit business that make you special and different. And then as you scale, you have to set up SOPs to actually be able to execute them in the field without you being there. And so you need, you know, standard procedures, and you need for, let's give you an example. Like if you're a business that wants to celebrate milestones, right? So you want to celebrate a 10th class, a 50th class, a 100th class, which is something we do at Barry's. You have to make sure that, you know, your manager at the beginning of each shift is printing out and writing down everybody's milestone, is communicating it to the front desk. They're making sure the light board says, Amanda, congrats, it's your 100th class. You know, there, you have to really find ways to be able to scale those experiences. And I think the second part of your question was like, how do you make it genuine? For us, at least, we're a very values-led company. And so everything we do ties back to our mission, our vision, and our values. And so our employees always understand why we're doing things, right? Like, we want to inspire people to work hard, have fun, find your strength, and be your best. And so everything we do comes from that purpose.
I'm curious. I want to sort of, you know, roll the clock back. And you said, you know, every piece of feedback you got was like, this is the best workout. Was there any, and maybe this is like the early days, but it sounds like you're really obsessed with obviously customer success. Has there been any like feedback loop where, you know, you've had your customers say, oh, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, and you allow it to actually influence your operations?
Oh, yeah, for sure. To give you an example is like our development plan and strategy. Now I have a whole like I have a chief development officer who's so talented. We have so much data that we're crunching constantly to figure out where we go next and why. But in the old days, our growth was 100% dependent on where our clients asked us to go next, you know? And so right. We have allowed that sort of anecdotal information to be a guiding light to a certain extent. And today, you know, a lot of businesses are data led. I would call Barry's data informed. Because it is something that like helps us make our decisions, but we do also really appreciate and prioritize as much what our clients are asking from us as we do, you know, hard data that we might be reading on an Excel document.
So how do you now do that across oceans and cultures and countries?
Yeah. I mean, it's the other key to our success has been choosing the right partners. And I would say that that is not only at a studio level, but also at a, you know, franchise level, because a lot of our international studios are franchised. And Amanda, you know, spoke earlier about Barry's Paris opening. Well, Barry's Milan was before Paris, and arguably even more challenging, like even more hurdles. I remember on opening day saying to the manager, like, there are a couple employees smoking in front of the studio. Would it be weird if I asked them to like walk down a block or so? And she looks at me and she goes, yes. And I was like, okay, great. You guys do. We, you know, as an example of a great partner, my partner there is Massimo Piombini, who is the former CEO of Valentino. And then was running Balmain, now I believe is with Diesel, and just really gets premium brand, gets customer experience, invests everything. He's obviously like a super passionate guy. And he's the father of that business. Like, he is the person that people turn to. And his daughter, Giulia, is incredibly talented. And she has been able to foster an amazing community, both in Milan and in Paris. And so it's really just, it's all about picking the right people to represent your brand and to scale those relationships.
And that's something, I think we talk about influencer marketing, we always think about like the individuals, right? Like these are social media content creators or whatever. And, you know, something that Neil and I, one of the reasons that we partnered, and I think we have a, such similar philosophy that it's not just about these social media content creators, but the ways to scale business. One of the greatest things about influencer marketing are like real brand partnerships that where both parties are mutually, they're both mutually driven, not so much by like each one's paying the other, but by, you know, we're both going to grow together. And I think that's like what you guys have done really well. And I think some of your other partnerships include like, is it true? And I haven't been to a Barry's to know this in a while, or actually it's not that, it's that I never ever shower there, which sounds terrible. I don't shower there. I do shower, but in the locker room, like really nice, like or I say it all. I always, I can't say this word.
Orbe.
Yeah, orbe. Yeah. I say Orbe, but yeah, Orbe. But products, and I'm like, that stuff is like $1 million, like for travel size bottles. I would go like, now I'm thinking maybe I should just stop investing in hair product and maybe I should just put the money towards the membership and kill two birds.
You would be shocked at how many people actually do that. And when we launched that amenities partner, we thought it would be like a great sort of surprise and delight for our clients, right? Potentially retain some clients. What we didn't expect is it was like a client acquisition campaign. It became this like wild posting all over Instagram where someone would post it and they'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm rounding up all my girlfriends and we're going just to like try the orbit. And it was just became this like really funny thing. But you know, there was also a moment and in the Barry's history, and it was probably 2016 or 17, where we took a look at the brand and we were like, we really need to start premiumizing this experience. Because Barry's was always the best workout in the world and we always like counted on that to get us there, right? But you'd walk in and it just wasn't that impressive. Like it wasn't even until 2011 we had locker rooms and showers. It was bare bones. It was like, just like there was a toilet in the studio and that was it. You had to wait in line to use it. And you know, by 2016, 17, we had changed the entire brand. We actually changed our logo. That's when we dropped boot camp. We started to move away from the sort of military motif and made a huge effort to not only make our clients feel like we were spoiling them, but also try and make the brand more approachable because we were so sick of that sort of barrier to entry. You know, we were so tired of hearing, it took me so long to come to Barry's, but I wish I had just known how great it is and how friendly everybody is and how it doesn't matter if I can't do everything the instructor's saying. I just got to do my best and that's enough, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a good point about, I have two questions here, but one is that there is an intimidation factor with, and I mean, I've been a competitive athlete and I'm about as crazy intense as it gets. And I remember my first time going thinking this is like, also because I thought that everybody that went there already knew each other. And so you think that you're going to feel like this outsider coming in to this crazy situation of a workout that everybody already knows. And there's a friendliness factor that really does genuinely feel real and they remember you. But what my question would be was when you switched, right? When you, because I remember, I think one of the first ones was like, it was like a pop-up in the Hamptons. And I don't even think there was a bathroom, to be honest. Maybe there was, but it was, you guys were just launching.
We've always had bathrooms. Okay.
I don't use them apparently. So no shower, no bathroom. I don't know what I, but when you like, it goes from being the intense workout, which is a very specific audience that literally there is a mindset on some people that do the intense athlete where they're like, no, I don't need to go to like Equinox and like all the frills and whatever. Like I'm there. I like garage style. Like, was there a shift? Was there fallout for some people that are like, okay, they've gotten way fancy? Or do you think that was really your from the beginning?
I think there definitely was a shift. Some people fell off, I'm sure, just anecdotally, and you know, we gained obviously more than who fell off. But the brand did re-identify itself, and I'm sure that in the process, we did lose some clients because there were legacy studios like West Hollywood where the price point went from an average of like 14 a class to 23, which is a big difference, right? And so that's always painful because you have a community that for the most part loves the brand. And when the brand changes, you hope that they adapt and that they stay, but you really can't. You have to understand who you are as a brand and you have to put that out into the universe. And if people see the value, then they'll stay, right? And if they are looking for that sort of like bargain basement workout place where there aren't any, you know, frills, then there are plenty of those to go around. I think we just recognized that wasn't where we didn't feel like that was truly what Barry's was about. So
that's interesting.
So I'm curious. It sounds like a lot of your success has come from, I mean, there's so many different elements you talked about here, but really focusing on the customer experience. Now you're giving this premium experience and you talked about community marketing. So it sounds like, you know, your customers have done all the talking for you. you've been able to incite word of mouth. But I'm curious, you know, for other brands and marketers that are listening, when you talk about community marketing, are there certain things you do, certain campaigns or certain activities you do to incite more word of mouth around certain things and other things, or engaging with influencers? Or is it a case where Barry's, I mean, the brand, the experience is the influencer?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely, with new studios, I would say we've leveraged local influencers. But for the most part, I think the way we define influencers are influencers of community. And so we would much rather be friends with the president of the, you know, parent teacher association in the local neighborhood than yep. the girl with 50 million Instagram followers. We haven't been able to drive a lot of value out of that. We haven't really ever gone full throttle at it, but in the times that we have, it hasn't really, I think, impacted the business. The most important thing for us is to invest in relationships, real relationships. And I was on a podcast this past week with the focus was about tech, and the guy leading it asked, he said, what does it feel like to be the darling fitness of, you know, of the tech industry? And I laughed and said, I mean, to be honest, ironic, because for a long time, tech has been our biggest area of opportunity. it kind of blows my mind that we are, because, you know, that has just, it's been the case always. Like, we've always had room for improvement. I said, but I think a lot of people who are that embedded and ingrained in technology are looking for real life experiences and real life relationships. And that's what we do. Having said that, we are launching our new digital product this April, which we're all really, really excited about. But like, to bring it all back to this mission and this vision and this values and the way that we do things, that product will actually be focused on real life relationships. And it will be something highly differentiated from anything that exists in the marketplace.
I think this is awesome. The way that you describe, it's funny, the way you talk about the extreme emphasis on relationships and building relationships. And you even talked about this, you know, we've talked one-on-one about like that, the same thing is with your employees too. And everybody, every stakeholder, every touch point is really the way that, you know, and the way you guys have grown. What true to me that, and I think to Neil too, is real true influencer marketing, that it's totally. Not this like, we're going to grab an Instagram star and pay them to put, I mean, that's social media advertising versus like, I think that's where people get confused when they're like, well, influencer marketing doesn't work. And like, no, it does actually, because at the end of the day, business is relationships. But when we're confusing it with what you said, which is like, you've got 50,000 followers, can we pay you to like, that's not going to land, that's an advertisement and it may or may not land.
Yep.
So I love that you talk about this. And Anna, can you just talk a little bit about how, because one thing is amazing is the instructors and how each of your instructors kind of garners their own little mini celebrity status in themselves. Like, they've all become these like brands. You talk about community. Your community consists of your employees and your clients. And you guys have managed to really make ambassadors out of your employees.
Yeah.
So I'm just questioning, like, you've given them the infrastructure, like what has it been about? Because there's fitness instructors everywhere, but when instructors are at Barry's, it was the first time that I had really seen like the instructors, people would be like, oh, and I go to so-and-so. And then the instructor on the other end would be really proud because they're at the X location. And so there was like the stat, like, again, it's like a symbolicness of being an instructor.
One of the things, and you and I have talked about this before, but one of the things that is different about Barry's instructors and the Barry's class in general is, you know, you go to other boutique places and there's a stage and there is lighting. And I mean, in some cases, I think maybe hair and makeup, it's like a whole show, right? And you are there to watch Jennifer on stage do her thing. And you're just the audience. Barry's, you're the star. And you, everywhere you go, whether you're on the treadmill or you're on the floor, you are looking in a mirror, you are watching your form, you're celebrating yourself. It is you versus you. And our instructors are really taught to be facilitators. They're typically way more educated than most boutique fitness instructors, right? They almost all have their PT. They've been training for a long time. They're definitely like intertrainers because they can be on the mic and, you know, be DJ and all of those great things, but they're there for you. And they're there to make sure you have a great time. And they're also in line with our values, right? And we've had some instructors that haven't been, who've been incredibly successful. And we say, there's the door. Thank you for joining us, but we don't have space for you. And I think, you know, it's funny because back in my past life, I was an actor. And I studied with a woman named Ivana. I studied with a woman named Ivana Chubbuck, who was amazing. And, you know, her clients won a lot of Academy Awards and stuff. And one day she's trying to explain to me what sexy meant. And I thought it was really interesting because the way she defined it was like, you don't have to like think of yourself in any way. You don't have to walk in a room and think of how you walk or how you talk or cross your legs or whatever. It's how you make other people feel that makes you sexy. And I think that's the same with like how to be charismatic and charming. And you just like your goal in life should be making other people feel good. And I feel like that's the through line in all of the various instructors. Like they are there to make you feel good.
That is so good. And it's actually interesting because I think some of the words that so many of the words that people aspire to are things that I think you can't really define like that. And a lot of them have to do with how you make other people feel, like the term influence in general. Mm-hmm. Like when trying to explain that, it's like, it's a force, but it's not persuasion. It's not manipulation. It's a pull. And you have this pull. It's like a river goes one direction. You're not going to push it the other direction. So how do you achieve that? And I think what you explained there is with sexiness or like with how you make people feel is so important. It's actually a good reminder. I'm going to use that for the rest of the day. And I'm going to walk into every sexy.
Go get him, Amanda.
What's really interesting is, world.
You know, we've talked to Amanda and I mean, we've interviewed a lot of entrepreneurs and CEOs and what have you. And, you know, a lot of companies, like with their marketing, they look elsewhere, like influencers or, you know, whatever it might be. But it sounds like your success has really been, you know, looking at yourselves, looking at that core brand, the core values, the core meaning of, you know, who you are and what you do. And you've just driven so much from that. That's been, you know, naturally led to other things. And I almost wonder if, you know, more businesses shouldn't be doing that, right? What are their core values? Why are they in existence? Do their employees understand and what have you, right?
It's actually a great point, Neil. And it's something that I really started to focus on more once I got an executive coach. And we worked together a lot. And we really honed in on our mission and our vision and our values. And we defined them. And we did a deep dive into the organization to make sure our employees were aligned before we even articulated them outwardly. We asked our employees what made, and after having practiced that, it changed, you know, the trajectory of our business. And I didn't realize how important it was until I'm doing a program called OPM at Harvard Business School. And literally every, you know, case study we do, or every other, maybe not every, but it, mission, vision, values, it comes up a lot. So it's actually already very much out there. And they are trying to teach, you know, entrepreneurs or future entrepreneurs the importance and the value of establishing that at the front end.
I like that you're one of those people that's constantly, constantly trying to get better, trying to learn, like even at your level, like going back to school again. but almost every company, I think there's a difference in values, beliefs, missions, because every company has these on a wall, has them in their playbook. Okay, so as the leader, what's the difference between every time I talk to you, you're like, oh, we're really valued. It's clearly a part of like, it's integral in everything that you do every day. Well, there are some that it's in the playbook and we may or may not know. Like, how do you infuse that from going from playbook to making
reality.
Sure? Yeah, because we can all put together our mission statement and then the mission statement stays on the page.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about looking at it every day, right? Not just being on the wall, but looking at it in every decision you make, in every employee review you conduct. Like if you're somebody who runs a business and you say that your mission or your vision value is driven, is that actually integrated into the way you review employees? Because it is for us. Each value is written down and we go point by point explaining to people, you know, where they may have risen or fallen.
I like that. And you know what? It's funny, the correlation between that and real athletic training, which is like when you have a goal, like when you're training for the Olympics, every day you wake up and you're like, this is what I'm doing today. And this is why, and everything. And then that dictates everything else that you do. So to lead that way is a good literal metaphor for your business model.
Yeah.
So Joanne, I'm curious. So I'm assuming that this, you know, this mission and the values have probably helped you better navigate what coronavirus has brought to your industry than other companies. I'm really curious as to, you know, how's that helped? I assume it has, but how did y'all react to, you know, what's happened over the last year?
Yeah, it was hugely important, not only for our, you know, the moment where when COVID started, but also like the roadmap that we created immediately thereafter. And what I mean by that is there are a lot of companies that would have really, when COVID hit and revenue went, you know, to $0 literally overnight, a lot of companies would have just hunkered down, minimized cost, furloughed everybody, and just waited this thing out, right? And what Barry's chose to do instead was keep, you know, every single instructor on payroll, find ways to continue to deliver on our mission and our promise to our clients. And, you know, that was really hard because Barry's is a business and we have a board, and it isn't, you know, optimal to be running a business at a negative cash flow for months and months at a time. So you have a lot of people to convince, but that is who we are, right? And the last thing we wanted to do was to leave our customers at a time where they needed us most. You know, we would, when we started Barry's at Home, and, you know, it was just still today until we launch our new product, is just leveraging Zoom where we're doing live classes and people are sharing their cam who choose to. When we first started it, it was extremely emotional. We had clients crying in the middle of classes. We had teachers crying during stretches. It was a time, I think, when our clients needed us most and we needed them the most. So it was a very worthwhile investment. And so that kind of led to, like I said earlier, the mission and the vision and the values all led to the roadmap and the development behind what we're creating, not only for our at-home product, but also all of the outdoor studios we have. We have 17 outdoor studios around the world, which has required, you know, capital investment. We've had to sign outdoor leases. So all of it has been because, you know, we are committed to staying connected to our clients.
That's awesome.
And one fun question, because we're getting to the end of our time, is, and want to be respectful of your time, is that who would you say is the one have been, you know, whether or not directly or indirectly in your life, has been one of the most influential people or forces that is outside of like your mother, father, you know, has been like a direct correlation, like in your career, has been most influential? That's a really hard question off the top of your head. So who comes first?
I can talk about, I think, Richard Branson, just being from an entrepreneur standpoint. It's, you're hard pressed to find a human being who's been able to take a brand the way he has and extend it horizontally. I just think it's so cool to have an airline and gyms and, you know, production companies and a music. It's just, it's beyond. And yet you always know what you're going to get, right? You know what Virgin stands for. You know it's fun. You know it pushes the envelope. And so he's just someone that I've always looked up to.
Yeah, that's a tough one to be.
You know, I don't know if I could execute Barry's frozen pizza. You know, I don't think I have the talents for that.
Well, that was the next question, right? I mean, there's so many directions you can go with this, Joey.
You know? I know, but Neil, I love pizza, so that's why I went there.
We'll add Barry's wine as well. Pizza wine. Well,
we've done that. We have one lift rosé. We just don't sell it. We give it away. So Amanda, I'll send you some bottles.
Yes, please. Oh, gosh. Well, I'm so excited. For those of you listening, Barry's is in Austin now. I said to Joey yesterday, I'm like, I can't believe that Austin's coming after Paris, but but I mean, let's get the big blink cities first. But no, this is very, very exciting. And it's been an absolute pleasure to know you and watch you guys just get bigger and bigger and more exciting over the years, and watch what you do too at the helm of this. I would love to say like what's next, but I don't think we have enough time in the day for all the things you can do. I feel like frozen pizza is not out of the running either.
Frozen pizza is not coming yet. I'm going to get started on it now when we get off.
Yeah, he said yet, Amanda. So yeah. It's coming.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so good to see you again.
You as well. And thank you so much for coming. If people are interested, where can they find Barry's?
Just barrys.com. It will take you directly to, you know, any locations around you. You can find if we have any outdoor sites. We now have, you know, the original Barry's class, which is treadmills and weights. We have Barry's Lift, which is just a 50-minute weightlifting class, so no cardio. And then we have Barry's Ride, which we just launched, which is with bikes instead of treadmills.
And everybody is welcome.
Yes. Just do your best. Don't be a hero.
Thanks for listening to the School of Influence podcast. Amanda and Neil would be honored if you spend a minute to write a review wherever you are listening to this podcast to help expose these interviews to a broader audience. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. Even better, build your influence and ours by sharing this podcast on your favorite social media with hashtag School of Influence. We would love to hear from and engage with you.